here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well. 98973. All are welcome. Come on in, everybody. State Roofing text line just waiting for you. Chris Martin loves to be able to read all the letters. Sometimes when if I'm in the studio, he'll turn to me and goes, wow, people write a lot of really nasty things. It darkens his soul. It really does. It really has an effect upon
him. We have a new text line, too. Is that right?
We do.
I don't know. I heard Gene Ursula kept trumpeting a new text line. I assume that was the whole station.
Did they get their own line? Why don't we have our own line? All right, hang on. Diving in the news. Diving into the news. All right. Is there a new line? Am I giving out the wrong line? Anybody?
No, it's still working. I'll give you the copy for the new one, too.
Oh, there's the copy?
The old one's working.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
All right, copy. Wow. Fancy radio talk. All right, the Republicans have just blocked a move that's basically not allowed the Democrats in order to keep the government going, and that's going to run out of money on Thursday, that lift the debt ceiling. This is the same stuff that happens all the time, right? And then basically they don't want them to do a little fancy roll around. They want them to come on the record and vote on continuing to spend at record levels.
Well, this is so supposedly this is to pay for bills that have already been spent.
Yes, right.
And the irony of this is that this is for a lot of this spending happened under the Trump administration. And the Republicans. Now, I'm going to take a kind of a partisan take on this. The Democrats went along.
Whoa.
Because
stop.
Unlike you, John, I try to be fair and balanced. But in this particular case, as right now, the Republicans are doing this to kind of, you know, screw the Democrats because they said, well, the Democrats, because when you're the, when you're, you've got the presidency, you're the ones in charge. Then if you screw up the country, it'll be blamed on you. That's sort of their calculation. It's a political calculation. The Democrats, and right now they're objecting to the fact that we're looking at these two massive infrastructure bills and they don't want to give, the Democrats any credit. And so they're saying, you know what? We're not going to pay our bills. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats, maybe because they're being played as fools, they objected to like the big, as the Democrats see it, the tax giveaway to the rich under Trump's administration. But they didn't threaten to not raise the debt ceiling. So they say, hey, fair is fair. And everybody thinks this is all going to, it's all going to probably work out because the Republicans, I think, Mitch McConnell, in fact, this was great on yesterday on Fox News. Chris Wallace was asking their panel, and one of the guys on their panel is somebody who used to work in Mitch McConnell's office, says, you know, that doesn't really seem crooked. And he got this kind of Cheshire cat grin on his face. He says, no, but he says, you can count on Mitch McConnell. He knows the levers of government so well that he knows that he can get away with this without being blamed because the Democrats, if the Democrats just get every one of their majority votes, you know, in the Senate, they'll be able to get this through. And he says, yeah, but aren't you playing with the nation's future? And he says, yeah, but they don't really think that it never does. We've never gone into default. I mean, we did a couple of 12 years ago. But that really is bad for our credit, and it would be bad for the country, and even the Republicans don't want that on their head in concert with the Democrats. But that's what they voted down today, which means Democrats have to get their act together by Thursday themselves, and a lot of that is hinging on this massive infrastructure bills. There's lots of negotiation going on.
Two bills. One is an infrastructure bill, and everybody's okay on that. But the progressives in the House, about 20 or 30 of them, have said to Nancy Pelosi, forget it. We're not going with you.
It's more than that, John. It's now up to 60. According to Camilla Jayapal, who is our own, you know, Seattle's own, she's the head of the Progressive Caucus. She's the one that got Nancy Pelosi to actually say, don't take a vote today because
we're not there for you.
I've got as many as 60. People are not even in the Progressive Caucus.
They're
now saying, So anyway, go ahead.
So well, the point is that what they say is, we're not going to vote on the $1.5 trillion infrastructure, which is about $550 billion, if we don't get the $3.5 trillion.
Without,
we need to link the two together. and we will knock that one down if you don't give us this one. So we're not going to spend $550 billion if you don't let us spend $3.6 trillion, which people have said it's actually close to $5 trillion. By the way, when they use the word trillion and five or 3.5, I have to understand that's over a 10-year period. These are all of these things through budget. It's not in one fell swoop. It's $3.5 trillion. We don't have that. But Joe is explaining that it's not going to – this is the new thing, and I've heard a couple of them say it over the weekend, that it's not going to cost anything.
It's all paid for. It's all paid for, but a lot of these are flat tax cuts that exist within my proposal. And they're being calculated as if the cost of the child care tax credit is a cost to the government. It's not. It's reducing taxes, not increasing taxes.
Well, not for everybody, because there's people who pay no taxes until we get a break. But he's like, it doesn't cost anything. It's free. Well, that's like saying if you went to a store or went to out to dinner and you and I went to dinner and we spent like $500 on the meal. Well, it's not free. We paid for it. And what do we spent the $500 on the dinner as opposed to spending the $500 on something else. So if you pay for it, it doesn't mean it's free. It means you just paid for it. He says he's going to pay for it by taxing the rich because the rich don't pay their fair share.
Right.
And then Jayapal over the weekend or just a little while ago, she texted out, U.S. has nearly one-third of the world's billionaires. Meanwhile, our poverty rate is the fourth highest in the world. Tax the rich. What? We are the fourth highest poverty rate in the world?
I know. I'd like to see what those where she's basing that.
I mean, I think she get that one right out of her congressional rear end, because there is no way we have the fourth highest poverty rate. We're not even close to that. If we were to take over the UK, let's get and make them the 51st state.
51st, I like that.
The 51st state. You know
let's
where they would
coin that?
They would be. I think they would be just. They would be poorer than Alabama. They'd be the second poorest state in the United States next to Alabama if we took over the UK. If we took over Sweden and Germany and Denmark and we added all those to the United States as well, they would also be near the bottom as far as just overall income. They would be bottom third of US. So we generate 20% of the world's wealth. We have about 4 or 5% of the world's population, and we are by no means anywhere near the fourth when it comes to poverty. But that doesn't matter, because is that a fact? Or should that be challenged? Should Twitter put a thing next to that and stop that? Because that's just misinformation, or are you allowed to just write whatever you want?
Jayapal's very sharp, so I'm sure that they there's probably a footnote to whatever she's referring to. Now, you caught me flat-footed because I just saw it during the break.
Okay. I didn't.
So we'll have to see what she's referring to, because it's not the total. But let's get back to what's interesting. What Jayapal is doing. So right now we've heard a lot about Manchin and Sinema. Those are the two moderate Democrats that are not going along in the Senate. That are not going along with the other the majority of Democrats that want to get this $3.5 trillion. And they say, listen, you've got to meet us. You need our votes, because without us, you don't have your 50 and you don't have your majority with Kamala breaking the tie. So there's been a lot of concentration on what they want. Well, now that the progressives in the House, led by Pramila Jayapal, you know, are saying, no, you've got to work with us. We are not going to go with it if you compromise with Manchin and Sinema, which means that both sides of the Democratic Party are willing to send Joe Biden's administration down in flames by not even agreeing with each other. So then the question is, are they really willing to do that? Is it kind of like a, you know, anyway, Jayapal, this is what I thought was interesting. This is the kind of negotiations going on. She says there are three ways. If people are objecting to the $3.5 trillion, that number, there are three ways to lower that bill's price tag, which is the way they figure they'll get it through. One is to reduce the number of
Here she is saying that.
Let's talk about what people want, and then let's come to the number from that. It's not just a random number. So if somebody wants less than $3.5 trillion, tell us what you want to cut. Do you want to cut the child care? Do you want to cut...
See, it's child care. So you want to cut child care? That's not fair to children, right?
Paid leave. What is it?
Paid leave? That's not fair to moms and dads. You want to cut that?
You want to cut. And then let's figure it out from there. But President Biden also said something very important the other day, which is this is a $0 bill because it's going to be completely paid for with taxes on the wealthiest and the largest the joint corporate.
Paid for. Do you believe by taking money from someone, like a corporation, which a corporation, a bunch of people, and corporations just collect taxes and then pass it on. Do you really believe, but if you tax corporations more, that there's no cost to the U.S. economy, and then the government takes it and spends it?
What the argument there is that it doesn't add to the national debt.
Will it grow the economy?
There are economists that argue that whether it'll inhibit it or expand, it'll expand because of that. But the thing is, it's rhetorical language, because when Trump, basically from the Democrats' point of view, the tax reform was a giveaway to the rich, the people that have the most money. Well, he didn't pitch it that way. He saw it as a way to start the economy. It's just it's the rhetorical spin on that. He didn't say, this is going to cost us $7 trillion more in debt. Apparently, Trump administration add $7 trillion to the national debt. He didn't pitch it that way, because he's pitching it on what it's going to do for us.
Taxes
for
the rich.
To say it doesn't cost us, it's not adding to the debt if you bring in the taxes on the richer.
Well, you have to just, it's difference between supply side economics or Keynesian economics. Do you allow the economy to keep its money to invest, to grow with capital, to create more jobs, to create more wealth? Or do you take the money from the private sector, redirect it to the government so that the government then distributes to different, special causes? Does that grow the economy, or does that just grow the size of government?
Some liberal economists say that what happened with the Trump tax cuts is that they kept that money. They didn't pour it back into the economy, and that's why it didn't work.
Let me get into they actually bought back stocks and things like that. But overall, taxes on the rich went up slightly. The taxes on the middle class and the poor went down. But overall, do you want a bigger government? This is what it all gets down to. Do you want the government more involved? Do you want the government to pay for college? Do you want the government to pay for childcare? Do you want the government to hand out checks every single month, regardless of the choices that people are making in their life? And if that's what you want, if you want universal basic health care and universal basic everything. Yes. Do you want the doctors to pay for all of it? Do you want them to pay for it? You want to be like Switzerland and Denmark and these other countries that are 4 million, 5 million people. If you are, and if you live in one of those Scandinavian countries, then you're okay making $50,000 a year, and the government takes 60% of your income, plus the value-added tax, which is about 20%. So then you simply say, if you're living over there, I don't care that I don't get to keep 60% of the money I make, because the government gives me this and this and this and this and this. I'm perfectly happy. I'm content. Do we in America, we want to tax people that are making $50,000 a year at 60% so they can provide to you college and daycare, the same sort of great customer service that you get at the TSA line?
Okay. So yes and yes.
You would like that. You would like that. To see somebody.
I'm talking about the American public. They like the agenda of the Biden administration. That's why he got more votes than Donald Trump, and why polls. And we both know the suspect aspect of polls. But they like this Build Back Better program with the $1 trillion package. The trillions of dollars in a package. They like what those are for. And that's why I think Jayapal has an interesting tactic, which is, okay, but tell me where you don't want to spend the money. Because people go, well, no, I actually think that's great. Childcare, help pre-kindergarten. Let's, get dental and hearing aid care for the elderly. That those are actually okay things. The question is, ultimately, is it going to be worthwhile? Is it going to be financially capable? And I think we're a long way from turning into Europe. Well, we are taking one more step that way, just like FDR took a step in that direction. But and people now,
do we want to be like Europe? Do we want to have growth at 2% or 1%? And by the way, their population is only 5 million.
We're not Europe, though. What we're doing is we're moving in the direction. Do you want a stronger social safety net?
And let me say this. Hold on one second. I fell off the line for 1 second. I want to adjust something that you said. The American people didn't vote for Joe Biden because of his plan. They voted for Joe Biden because he wasn't Donald Trump. He had no plan other than the fact I'm not Donald Trump. But secondly, Tom, do we want to be Europe? Because once you start in that direction, it's very hard to stop, because you just continue to grow the size of government, and then nobody wants to vote something out of their own pocket. The reason everybody wants to get this blast, they want to get this. But do they really? Because do they want to get taxed at 50% of their
income?
Not
that heavily, no.
Oh, then how much?
Now they don't.
How much?
Well, If right now, if the average were paying 14%, we could do 15%. If it if it provides for, you know, dental care and hearing aids for the elderly that are not covered by Medicare, now people go, yeah, that's worth it. So we don't have to, it's not like it's all or nothing. We can move in that direction, just like Social Security is. That's a version of socialism,
which is going broke.
Extreme version,
which is
well,
going
I know,
broke.
But we can also people like it, and if we can figure out a way to make it financially, you know, soluble, then people do
taxes
like that.
Increase the taxes. But it gets into this, Tom. Do you want the government, with the great government service that it has, to choke out choices that are available in the Tom, let me ask you this.
Choke them out, John. It's not that extreme.
Tom,
that's the
it is. Because, Tom, here's the difference. Here's the difference. Yeah. When you make something free, it becomes very, very expensive. College, for instance. Community college become very expensive.
Free.
Healthcare is very, very inexpensive because it's free, because the only person that pays for it is every other taxpayer. If you're okay with the government getting larger and larger and larger and larger to provide all of these great
only
services that the
people.
Government can service us with, when there is no competition, there is no advancement. So you end up with government-run organizations. And if you think government-run organizations are good, even though there's no competition to make them better,
it's a combination of both, obviously.
Okay.
You don't want to squelch out. That's why I've always said, my ideal scenario, again, of a Plato's philosopher king, is a capitalist system with a socialist underpinning.
How big,
you know,
though?
As the safety net. Well, that's the battle. If we pay 14% taxes, I think we could maybe do 15% and see if that's worth it, or 16% and see if that's worth it. That is the balance, and that's what we do all the time. And that's why we have Republicans who are more fiscally conservative and Democrats who are more liberal in their social safety net desires.
I wouldn't give the Republicans credit. I would not give the Republicans credit for being fiscally conservative.
Well, I know that reason, is true.
Right. And if you find out that it's not 14, not 15, not 16, not 17, that you get up to 20, chalk it up to the American people being so naive to think that, we'll just tax the rich, we'll get the money from them, and then therefore we'll have all these services. Do you don't think the rich guy will do everything he possibly can, or she will do everything they possibly can to avoid paying those taxes? Is it like the millionaire surtax in France when more than 57,000 millionaires moved out of France? Mm-hmm. They will leave. They will do something. They will not stand by and allow the government to rob them of their money.
But as we've mentioned on the show before, 75 years ago, the rich were paying a much higher percentage of their taxes.
No, they weren't.
Yes.
No, they were not.
Well, okay. Well, maybe
look
we
that,
had the same
all right,
debate.
I'll tell you what. During the break, you can look it up and you'll see that is absolutely
They always
garbage.
Cite always cite that as the distinction between how socially, what would be caring the rich were as opposed to how they are now, which is to keep their money and hang on to it.
So. Okay. I know. 90% during Eisenhower. Who paid it? Nobody. All right. Here's Tracy Taylor with traffic. Doing everything for us, Tom.
You bet.
They are. They're bringing Rachel Bell in. Here she comes. Rachel Bell, Muffles Casino, the biggest and best in Northwest. Rachel Bell, a close second. But when it comes to entertainment, they are neck and neck always. Muffles Casino and Rachel Bell.
We both have neck. Our necks are long, and we like to stand next to each other with our long necks, and no one can tell us apart.
I know. It's weird.
It's
weird
so
when people
weird.
Do a double take on that one.
Yeah.
Hey,
so
are you too much? Do you do much on Instagram?
Ugh. Yes. Too much. I can talk about my addiction after I tell you about the story. I don't have any other addictive tendencies, but Instagram, man, it gets me. So, of course, I'm not the only one. Everyone's addicted to Instagram, especially teenagers and children. So Facebook announced today that they're going to pause their Instagram Kids platform that they've been developing, not because their own research has showed that it's harmful to kids' mental health, which it did, but because they're being pressured by a lot of people that what they are doing is bad. So the difference would be for the kids' platform is it would be ad-free and it would allow parents to monitor their kids' activity. And it's meant for kids 13 or younger, because Instagram doesn't allow children who are younger than 13 to be on its platform, but they know that kids can just lie about their age and go on anyway. Mm-hmm. So the Wall Street Journal reported this month that they got a hold of this internal research that Facebook did. Of course, Facebook owns Instagram. And in this research, they had all these slides that basically admitted that they knew that it was harmful, mostly for teenage girls. So here's a couple of the quotes. We make body image issues worse for 1 in 3 teen girls. That's a slide from the internal presentation. 32% of teen girls said that when they feel bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. Teens blame Instagram for increases in the rate of anxiety and depression. Let's see. Among teens who reported suicidal thoughts, 13% of British users and 6% of American users trace the desire to kill themselves back to Instagram. And this is Instagram, not Facebook, because 22 million teens are on Instagram every day. Only 5 million are on Facebook because that's for your grandma.
Wow.
So they know all of this, but they weren't admitting it. And they're still like trying to defend it, because in May, attorney generals from 44 states, they begged Instagram to abandon the platform. Members of Congress on both sides, Democrats and Republicans, have expressed concerns. And today, Adam Mosseri, who is the head of Instagram, said, "I still firmly believe that it's a good thing to build a version of Instagram that's safe for tweens. Their argument is teens are going to use Instagram anyway. This would be a safer version." And then they keep pulling this argument that, yeah, maybe there's some bad stuff, but it's mostly good. It's helping kids form connections. Ugh, I don't buy any of it. I think that they are evil empire. And in this, I really do, like, because there's this other Wall Street Journal article that Chris sent me, your producer, today, and they're basically comparing them to the tobacco companies. Like, they don't want to give up any of their internal research. They had to kind of pull this out, and they're hiding things. They know it's bad, and they're pushing for it anyway because they want to make more money.
It just replaced the word Instagram or social media with any other noun that you'd like. And if you knew that it was producing in 33% of its users a sense of depression, mental illness, and in a smaller percentage, thoughts of suicide.
Yeah.
The federal government, the FDA, the whatever, FAA, the FCC, there would be so many alphabet numbers or alphabet letters from the government cracking down on whatever that noun is. But in this regard, Instagram, can you believe that you would even think of, like, yeah, let's keep doing it. Maybe we can get younger kids. To me, when I read that whole thing, the Wall Street Journal did a great job, Rachel, as you saw. They looked at a whole bunch of stuff, Facebook and Instagram. It's quite telling what social media has in store and the respect that it has for its users.
It's scary. It really is scary. And they are having hearing this Thursday. The leaders of the Senate Commerce Committee's Consumer Protection Subcommittee, which sounds not that important, but maybe I'm wrong. There's too many words. Subcommittee? We need a big committee. They're going to be questioning a senior Facebook executive this Thursday about the effects on mental health. And you're right. I mean, you know, even for myself, like I was saying, I am so grateful that I did not grow up in the age of social media. I'm so glad that I had authentic connections with people, because I know I would be just like the kids today, because whenever I go on Instagram, I have a really hard time getting off, and I can't figure out why. I don't even care about the content. It's just the scrolling. It's everything that they say, you know, that it's just like this drug. I have to delete it from my phone every time I'm done using it. So some days I delete it and re-download it like 15 times a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a question.
Tom, pause for a moment. Do you hear what she just said?
Yes. She's an addict.
Yes.
I heard her. Yes. We need to do an intervention.
Yes.
But now let me do a little kind of devil's advocate pushback. I don't know if the majority of people on Instagram are teenage girls, but it sounds like that makes up a big audience. Teenage girls are going to be subject to body image depression or disappointment by the nature of the fact that they're teenage girls. If Teen Magazine, if we didn't have Instagram, people, if they looked at Teen Magazine kinds of things, they saw all these pretty people they wish they could be. You're already, isn't Instagram just tapping into one of the hard parts about being a teenage girl? And that it's not just Instagram, it's all of, you know, the entire Madison Avenue, you know, culture that we've, you know, sort of engendered in this country that is now made its way over to Instagram. In other words, if we got rid of Instagram, I'm afraid all of those teenage girls that are depressed and suicidal would still be depressed and suicidal, because it's the whole universe, the culture they're living in.
I thought about this, and there's no way to compare, because it's not like they have numbers like this, you know, for girls reading magazines. The thing I was thinking was, A, yes, young girls, there's always been, you know, eating disorders and depression and suicide, of course. But the difference, I think, is with the magazine, you know, you kind of pick it up and put it down. And yes, you absorb the content. But this is something that you can look at 24 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah. It's just also a more effective conveyor of it's that kind of, than a magazine. Yes.
It's kind of never ending. And it also makes you jealous of your own friends in a way that does happen in real life. But I think it's intensified because in real life, you know, you only know so much about what people are doing on social media. Everyone is constantly putting up what they're doing and bragging and like posting pictures of themselves that are not always real. They have filters on them. And so you're just constantly being bombarded by like maybe things you weren't invited to or that your classmate is so much prettier, even though they actually don't look like they do in the picture. I think magazines have actually taken more responsibility because if you look at them now, they actually have stopped airbrushing in a lot of them. They use body types that are more varied. It's not just skinny, skinny models anymore. So I think they're cleaning up their act as social media is coming in because it's not models, it's real people, and you can't control what they
post. That's a good point. And it is definitely an intensifier. That I grant you. Yes.
Yeah, it's a form of pollution, and apparently Instagram is okay with 33% of the people that are exposed to this causing mental illness. That's okay. And your statement would be, Tom, that, well, whatever would come along could be worse.
33%
of teenagers are, you know, girls that are affected, depressed because of the pollution that's coming. If it was a factory pouring that into the air or pouring it into the water, well, 33% of the people that live near the factory are having some sort of adverse mental or physical effects because of it. Well, all right. Can't do anything about it because the next factory that come along could be even worse.
Yeah. It's just a cause and effect issue. I don't know that we can prove that users are more depressed. Can we prove that they're depressed and wouldn't be depressed if it wasn't for Instagram? I think something else would replace Instagram. But I like Rachel's explanation that it's an intensifier. It's like, those tendencies are always there.
It's built that way
for teenagers. But yes, and they're capitalizing on it.
We'll let Rachel get back to deleting and then downloading the app.
Oh, sorry. Right? I wasn't paying attention. I was looking at Kim Kardashian on Instagram.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave you right now in your addiction. All right. Sorry, Rachel.
Help.
No, can't help. No. Admit there's a higher power. All right. Tracy Taylor, higher power in traffic. Nope. All right. Chris, I know you sent me the new text line. What is the text line I was supposed to read? It's new. It's not the state roofing text line, 989-73. What is it? I don't want to throw
it's
everybody off.
It's 888-973-5476. Cairo text line, 888-973-5476.
5476. Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
We sound a lot like Chris. A couple of quickie stories here as we're heading in and you're writing to us. That's good. Teeny Tiny Lady will be making her way in. I assume she comes in solo because Chris doesn't like to deal with her because they've had a couple of hard times together.
They've broken up.
South Korea has decided to ban dog meat. This is upsetting to Chris Martin, who's actually been to South Korea. And you go there primarily for a hair of the dog. In this case, the hair of the dog is literally leg of the dog.
Yeah, that's what everybody said. It's like if you have a hangover, there's nothing better than dog meat soup. It's true. That's what everyone was saying. But we were only there a couple days, and I didn't want to try it. But if there's nothing sadder than walking by in one of the markets, and there's little teeny cute dogs that are being sold to restaurants to be killed. So the head of the country is saying he's a dog lover, and he's saying we should stop this.
Yeah, but do something else for hangovers.
Yeah, like cat.
Wow.
So what right now,
Chris, you better cover up.
I love cats.
Was that a
joke? Not a joke.
I love cats more
not
than
a joke.
No. Don't ever hurt a cat.
Okay, fine.
Okay. So there's been a lot of international criticism of South Korea for the consumption of dog meat. And right now, what they're trying to do is get just to stop the killing of the animals, the dogs, because they say they do it so inhumanely, bludgeoning, hanging, and electrocution. Oof. I don't know why it would have to be that. However, they do say that they are working to create new measures as soon as this Thursday that's going to prevent that cruelty, at least. But there is a movement against... I love this. You know, everyone complains, and I don't know if America can take any credit for this. It may be just the general rest of the world. How, you know, the Americanization of all these different cultures and how terrible that is. In this case, they say South Koreans are becoming more and more dog and cat friendly, and so they are now starting to be appalled at their consumption of dog meat, like we have. I don't know if we've always been, but as long as I'm aware, so that they see it as somehow cruel and inhumane, which I think just points up how ridiculous what we allow ourselves to eat and not eat.
Right.
I mean, like we eat rabbit, we eat lamb. I love lamb, but when you think of them, how are rabbits and lambs any less lovable than a poor dog? We eat cows in India. They're revered. It's like there's no rhyme or reason. The fewer animals we eat, the better, I think, though.
I did an auction on Saturday for the Marin County Humane Society, and Marcus D., who used to be here in town as a producer, and I think he's worked on Star 101, he said at the very beginning, just a quick show of hands, this is not in the script, how many people here like dogs and cats better than people?
I bet a majority.
Majority. They're like,
Yeah. That's too easy.
You're right. It's like shooting fish. How many people like fish in a barrel? Shot at. All right, there you go. Tracy Taylor looking at traffic.